This is podcast number 31 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm talking about the Madonna in art. Our Mother's University topic for month four is art, and since we're celebrating Christmas this month and we are a group of mothers, I thought I would focus this podcast on the Madonna in art. I'm going to share sections from a book called The Madonna in Art by Estelle Hurl, written in 1897, which I'll link in the podcast notes. But before we dive in, I think it bears repeating a couple of quotes from the audio I did in connection with art. Our learning objective in studying art is captured in this little experience shared by one of our heart educator friends. Quote, "The first time I saw Raphael's Disputa, which decorates one of the walls in one of the rooms of the Vatican in Rome, I had set out with my guidebook, intending to study all the paintings by Raphael that decorate these rooms. I entered the first room, and I suppose I looked around the other walls, seeing the other paintings, but all I recall during this visit was the Disputa. I sat down before it and remained seated. I do not know how long, but the morning slipped away. What I thought about as I looked at the picture, I cannot tell you. My impression is that I did not think at all. I only felt. My spirit was lifted up and purified and strengthened with happiness. Returning to my hotel, I read about the picture in my guidebook. It appeared that one of the figures represented Dante. I had not noticed it, and as I read on, I noticed other things that I had missed, that indeed the whole subject, as far as it could be put into words, escaped me. I had no knowledge what the painting was about, only I had felt its beauty. Since then, I have studied more about the picture and discovered some of the means Raphael employed to arouse this depth of feeling, and the knowledge has helped me to find beauty in other things." Close quote. John Van Dyke wrote, "You must look at pictures studiously, earnestly, honestly. It will take years before you come to a full appreciation of art, but when at last you have it, you will be possessed of one of the purest, loftiest, and most ennobling pleasures that the civilized world can offer you." So let me start today's discussion by sharing part of Estelle Hurl's introduction. And you'll have to let me know if this is helpful or not. I know many of you have very limited reading time, so I'm trying to share some of the highlights of certain books to give you an overview and a preview. If reading these passages to you is putting you to sleep, I'll have to look for a plan B, so let me know. Here's from the introduction. This little book, The Madonna in Art, is intended as a study of Madonna art as a revelation of motherhood. With the historical and legendary incidents in the life of the Virgin, it has nothing to do. Out of the great mass of Madonna subjects are selected here only the idealized and devotional pictures of the mother and babe. It is now 15 centuries since the Madonna with her babe was first introduced into art, and it is safe to say that throughout all this time, the subject has been unrivaled in popularity. It requires no profound philosophy to discover the reason for this. The Madonna is the universal type of motherhood, a subject which, in its very nature, appeals to all classes and conditions of people. No one is too ignorant to understand it, and none too wise to be superior to its charm. The little child appreciates it as readily as the old man, and both alike are drawn to it by an irresistible attraction. Thus, century after century, the artist has poured out his soul in this all-prevailing theme of mother love, until we have an accumulation of Madonna pictures so great that no one would dare to estimate their number. It would seem that every conceivable type was long since exhausted, but the end is not yet. So long as we have mothers, art will continue to produce Madonnas. Then she goes on to talk about how overwhelming it is to approach the subject without some kind of system for studying the art. While an historical student may group the paintings according to the era in which they were painted, and an art critic may group them by the technical schools they represent, or there may be either other scholarly groupings, Estelle first groups them according to the setting of the composition, and then with their inner significance, which will hopefully make more sense as we go along. I've created a little video from the paintings she talks about in her book that you can watch and gain a quick overview of these paintings as she has grouped them. I hope the brief descriptions that I'll share here with you will help you appreciate what you're looking at. Then, if you'd like to go back and study each painting in greater detail, you can do that from the book I've linked in the podcast notes. So let's take a look at the first five groups, the settings of the paintings. I'll let Estelle teach you herself. First, there is the portrait Madonna, in which the figures are half-length against an indefinite background. We turn with relief to a simple portrait mother like this. It is another case where the simplest is best. Next, the Madonna enthroned, where the setting is some sort of throne or dais. In every true home, the mother is queen, enthroned in the hearts of her loving children. There is, therefore, a beautiful double significance which we should always have in mind in looking at the Madonna enthroned. The picture stands for the Virgin Mother as Queen of Heaven. Understood typically, it represents the exaltation of motherhood. The story of Cimabue's Madonna, an example of the Madonna enthroned, is one of the oft-told tales we like to hear repeated. How on a certain day about 1270, Charles of Anjou was passing through Florence. How he honored the studio of Cimabue by a visit. How the Madonna was then first uncovered. How the people shouted so joyously that the street was thereafter named the Borgo dei Allegri. And how the great picture was finally borne in triumphal procession to the church of Santa Maria Novella. Sir Frederick Leighton has preserved for future centuries this story, already 600 years old, in a charming pageant picture, Cimabue's Madonna, carried through the streets of Florence. Third, the Madonna in the Sky, or the Madonna in Gloria, where the figures are set in the heavens is represented by a glory of light, by clouds, by a company of cherubs, or by simple elevation above the earth's surface. It is of pictures like this that our poet Longfellow is speaking when he wrote, "Thou peerless queen of air, as sandals to thy feet the silver moon dost wear." The fourth grouping is the pastoral Madonna, with a landscape background. It was many centuries before art, at first devoted exclusively to figure painting, turned to the study of natural scenery. Thus it was that Madonna pictures of various kinds had long been established before the idea of landscape setting was introduced. In the ideal pastoral, the landscape entirely fills the picture, and the figures are an integral part of it. Such paintings are so rare that we write in golden letters the names of the few who have given us these treasures. The pastoral Madonna is the sort of picture which can never be outgrown. The charm of nature is as perennial as is the beauty of motherhood, and the two are always in harmony. Finally, we have the Madonna in a home environment where the setting is an interior. A subject so sacred as the Madonna was long held in too great reverence to permit of any common or realistic treatment. The pastoral setting brought the mother and her babe into somewhat closer and more human relations than had before been deemed possible. The Madonna as a domestic subject, represented in the interior of her home, was hesitatingly adopted and has been rarely treated. The northern painters, the Dutch and the Flemish, led the way, peculiarly home-loving in their tastes. Their ideal woman is the Hausfrau, and it was with them no lowering of the Madonna's dignity to represent her in this capacity. As you watch the slideshow, you'll notice Estelle arranges the paintings in the order of historical development as far as possible. Now, the second grouping addresses the question, which aspects of motherhood are displayed in the Madonna pictures, or in other words, in what relation to her child has the Madonna been represented? The answer includes the following three subjects. 1. The Madonna of love, in which the relation is purely maternal. The emphasis is upon a mother's natural affection, as displayed towards the child. Undoubtedly the most popular of all Madonna subjects, certainly the most easily understood, is the Madonna of love. The mother's mood may be read at a glance. She is showing in one of a thousand tender ways her motherly affection for her child. She clasps him in her arms, holding him to her breast, pressing her face to his, kissing him, caressing him, or playing with him. Love is written in every line of her face. Love is the keynote of the picture. Pictures like these constantly reiterate the story of a mother's love, an old, old story which begins again with every new birth. Number two, the Madonna in Adoration, in which the mother's attitude is one of humility, contemplating her child in awe. The first tender joys of a mother's love are strangely mingled with awe. Her babe is a precious gift of God, which she receives into trembling hands. A new sense of responsibility presses upon her with almost overwhelming force. Hers is the highest honor given unto woman. She accepts it with solemn joy, deeming herself all too unworthy. This spirit of humility has been idealized in art in the form of Madonna in Adoration. It represents the Virgin Mary adoring her Son. Sometimes she kneels before him. Sometimes she sits with clasped hands, holding him in her lap. Whatever the variation in attitude, the thought is the same. It is an expression of that higher, finer aspect of motherhood, which regards infancy as an object not only of love, but of reverent humility. It is a recognition of the great mystery of life, which invests even the helpless babe with a dignity commanding respect. A picture with so serious an intention can never be widely understood. The meaning is too subtle for the casual observer. But though the sacred mystery of Mary's experience sets her forever apart as blessed among women, she is the type of true motherhood in all generations. Before such pictures as these, gleaming in the dim light of quiet chapels, many a heart, before unbelieving, may learn a new reverence for the mysterious sanctity of motherhood. Finally, the Madonna as Witness, in which the mother is preeminently the Christ-bearer, wearing the honors of her proud position as witness to her son's great destiny. In proportion to a mother's ideals and ambitions for her child, does her love take on a higher and purer aspect. The noblest mother is the most unselfish. She regards her child as a sacred charge, only temporarily committed to her keeping. Her care is to nurture and train him for his part in life. This is the object of her constant endeavor. Thus she comes to look upon him as hers and yet not hers. What is true of all motherhood finds a supreme illustration in the character of the Virgin Mary. She understood from the first that her son had a great mission to fulfill, that his work had something to do with a mighty kingdom. Never for a moment did she lose sight of these things as she pondered them in her heart. Her highest joy was to present him to the world for the fulfillment of his calling. As a subject of art, this phase of the Madonna's character requires a mode of treatment quite unlike that of the mother as love or the mother as adoration. The attitude and expression of the Virgin are appropriate to her office as the Christ-bearer. Both mother and child, no longer absorbed in each other, direct their glance towards the people to whom he is given for a witness. The mother's lap is the throne for the child, from which, standing or sitting, he gives his royal blessing. It will be readily understood that so lofty a theme cannot be common in art. The progress of painting and the growing love of beauty at length wrought a change. The time came when art saw the possibility of uniting, with the religious conception of previous centuries, a more natural ideal of motherhood. Thus, while the Madonna continues to be preeminently a witness of her son's greatness, it is not at the sacrifice of motherly tenderness. Raphael's Sistine Madonna is the greatest ever produced from every point of view. Its theme is the transfiguration of loving and consecrated motherhood. Mother and child, united in love, move towards the glorious consummation of the heavenly kingdom. It has been said that Raphael made no preparatory studies for this Madonna, but in a larger sense, he spent his life in preparation for it. The Sistine Madonna is above all words of praise. All extravagance of expression is silenced before her simplicity. Hers is the beauty of symmetrically developed womanhood. The perfect poise of her figure is not more marked than the perfect poise of her character. Not one false note, not one exaggerated emphasis jars upon the harmony of body, soul, and spirit. Confident, but entirely unassuming. Serious, but without sadness. Joyous, but not to mirthfulness. Eager, but without haste. She moves steadily forward with steps timed to the rhythmic music of the spheres. The child is no burden, but a part of her very being. The two are one in love, thought, and purpose. Sharing the secret of his sacred calling, the mother bears her son forth to meet his glorious destiny. Art can pay no higher tribute to Mary, the mother of Jesus, than to show her in this phase of her motherhood. We sympathize with her maternal tenderness, lavishing fond caresses upon her child. We go still deeper into her experience when we see her bowed in sweet humility before the cares and duties she is called upon to assume. But we are admitted to the most cherished aspirations of her soul when we see her oblivious of self, carrying her child forth to the service of humanity. It is thus that she becomes of his witnesses unto the people. It is thus that all generations that shall call her blessed. I'll divert a little bit from Estelle Hurl's writings to add a little bit more about this final painting, which I will link as a PDF so you can print it out and study it in greater detail. In fact, you'll find a link to the PDFs of all these paintings in the podcast notes if you'd like to study them more in depth, using Estelle's writings to guide you through an appreciation of each one of them. The Sistine Madonna was Raphael's final Madonna painting and said to be his crowning achievement. I thought it was interesting that Lew Wallace mentioned, as he researched the characters to write Ben-Hur and they came alive to him in his imagination, that there were only two Madonnas that did justice to the Mary created on his heart. One of them was Raphael's Sistine Madonna. The curtains to me are suggestive of a stage, as though there was a role to be played, an act to be performed in this stage of life. In the clouds, you see the faces of unborn babies. So many lives are dependent upon the successful completion of this act. It is said that when the painting was first placed, it was set opposite a crucifix that would have been the object of sight, and that the expressions on the faces of the mother and child reflect the dread and yet the resolution of that supreme offering that lie ahead. The two other figures in the paintings are saints. The figure on the left is Saint Sixtus, a 3rd century martyr, who some say is pointing to the scene of the crucifixion, or others say he is calling attention to the myriads of souls who are watching in anticipation of the events to unfold. The figure on the right is Saint Barbara, who is always connected with her tower, which you see faded in the background, largely hidden behind the curtain. Saint Barbara's pagan father locked her in a tower to keep her away from the world's influences. Yet despite his efforts, she became converted to Christianity and endured torture and her eventual beheading at the hands of her father rather than deny her faith. I noted the perfect peace on her face, that gift of the Prince of Peace that stands independent from outward circumstances. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. I hope I've given you enough of a background to enjoy the slideshow of Madonna paintings I've prepared for you. Estelle Hurl said to notice that as we go from Madonna as love to Madonna as adoration, and from Madonna as adoration to Madonna as witness, we advance farther and farther into the experience of motherhood. At the same time, there is an increase in the dignity of the Madonna and to her importance as an individual. In the Mother as Love paintings, she is subordinate to her child, absorbed in him, so to speak. His infantine charms often overmatch her own beauty. When she arises to the responsibility of her high calling, she is, for the time being, of equal importance and interest. In conclusion, Estelle said that through studying both the settings and the internal meanings of the paintings, we are admitted into some new secret of a mother's love. The music I chose as a background to the Madonna slideshow is a movement from Vivaldi's Gloria in D major, which is frequently performed at Christmas time. Based on an ancient text that can be traced back to the 2nd century, the words in part read, "Glory, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace and goodwill to men. We praise you, we bless you, we adore you, we glorify you, we give you thanks because of your great glory." A fitting accompaniment, don't you think? And now I'll close with a single stanza from a poem written by Bertha Anderson Kleinman. "Oh, let me enfold thee, my baby, tonight, while legions are singing in joyous delight. A new star has risen to hail thee, divine, for you are a king, but tonight you are mine." Bye-bye. See you next time.